for Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 23rd of April. A win! The Jazz force a Game 5. Lots of things show the Jazz have improved. Is it a little too late, or is there a possibility for a miracle? We'll break it all down after the Jazz win Game 4, coming up on Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and a look at the Jazz that hopefully gives you more knowledge and makes you a better fan of the team. It is your daily podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can get it on the Himalaya app as well as the brand new Himalaya app. You can check it out. They do a great job with sorting. New little update just came down on it. Also, Spotify, Google, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Jazz. That was fun. Winning is way more fun than losing. And the Jazz really played incredibly hard, incredibly smart, and things came together. Frankly, things have come together for two straight games. The Jazz just made enough mistakes and just didn't make enough plays in Game 3 that they didn't get it. But it does make you, and they didn't, you know, they didn't make enough looks. Jazz makes some looks in Game 3, and this all feels very different right now. It'd be quite something. So that's the only bummer. I don't mean to start there, but let's go to what the Jazz are doing well, and where they have made strides. Defensively, they came out of this series with this kind of crazy, wacky, weird system, and the whole concept was that the Rockets don't run pick and roll against the Jazz. The Rockets stopped doing it midway through the season against us. That's why they were better in the second two games. Our pick and roll defense is the number one pick and roll in the NBA. They didn't do very well against it, averaged like 0.8 points per, and weren't able to get going. So they went to isolation. The Jazz analyzed that as saying, okay, well, first, James Harden's step back is everything. He was 6 of 9 on step backs last night, and 8 of 19, 2 of 10 otherwise. So they knew they had to take away a step back. They also, their second goal is to not foul him. And their third goal was to get him to take that floater shot that he doesn't like very much. And they've actually done that. And he has really struggled in that floater shot. He's 4 of 23 now in the series on the in the paint non-restricted area. So here is Harden. Zach Lowe writes an entire piece on all the strides Harden has made and the floater game and all this, and he has improved it. 2 years ago, he took it about 3% of his shots in the playoffs. He's now taking it. But last night, he absolutely 100% shaded away from that shot. He wanted no part of that shot last night. He took two of them early and missed. He is not having a good series at the rim. He's 11 of 29. And they have him at 4 of 22 now on shots that are in the paint non-restricted area. He's 18 of 45 on threes from above the break, which are almost all step backs. So as the series has gone on, the Jazz kind of strange, awkward defense, which I think in all honesty, if we read what the players had to say, was hard for the players to execute and understand. I think it was Joe Ingles the other day, last night, who basically said, you've done something all year long correctly. You're the best at it. And you don't do it, it feels strange. We're seeing it work. The Rockets' offensive rating in Game 3 was a 99.1. It was their 74th offensive performance of the season. Last night, they were a 94.2. It was their 79th offensive performance of the season. They, as a team, were 10 of 21 at the rim last night, one of 10 in the floater zone, one of 12 on anything that was not restricted area or three. The Rockets also missed 14 straight threes to close the game last night, which is the scenario, you know, if you want to start doing pie-in-the-sky fantasy stuff on this, you know, trying to get, oh my gosh, is it possible? That's where this thing play, there's the possibility. That is, they take long shots with high variance that in theory could get tight. And, you know, if there's a if the Jazz can pull off a miracle in game six, or excuse me, in game five and get this thing to continue along, then all of a sudden those shots probably get more and more difficult. The Jazz get looser and looser, and here they are. The Jazz have clearly made strides. Let me dig into the strides the Jazz have made in this series. Quinn Snyder at the podium yesterday in the pregame show referenced QSQ. QSQ is this we talk about it a lot on the show. It's quantified shot quality. The idea of if an average player in the league takes the shot, what could happen? What the average outcome would be. The Jazz QSQ last night, interestingly enough, was their almost tied for second lowest series, and they still did not have a good shooting night. The Jazz have not had a good shooting night yet in this series. Their QSQ last night was a 54.2, which is back to what it was in game one. In game one, though, they shot 11 percentage points below what the average team would have. 11. In game two, they shot 14 percentage points below. In game three, they shot 8 percentage points below. And last night, they only shot 5 percentage points below. They still haven't shot well. On wide open threes last night, they were 7 of 20, I think. That's not terrible, actually. That's getting close to league average. But they haven't, considering how terrible they have been prior, they still have not had that shooting night where maybe everything goes in. Maybe we won't have that hot shooting night. Maybe you just don't get that in the playoffs. But we have not had that. What gets really interesting is what the Jazz have done to the Rockets defensively. The Rockets' QSQ that the Jazz are forcing them into has stayed right around 54%. And the Jazz are forcing them into less good shots as the series goes on, which is pretty interesting. So Houston's QSQ last night, they shot poorly. They shot 8 percentage points below. It's a make-or-miss league. They shot 6 percentage points below in game three. And the Jazz are able, after the first two nights where the Rockets were up at 54. Actually, the Rockets last night got fairly decent shot quality, 54.3. So it's a little bit of that the Jazz got the Rockets on the road to go miss some shots, and then the Jazz just didn't make, you know, one more shot in game three, and they made a few more last night, weren't as poor. But the Jazz still have not had a decent shooting night in the series. Maybe you just don't, right? Like, let's give credit to the opponent, too. You may not get good shooting nights. It might be the playoffs. And I do think, as we talked about yesterday, there's an interesting idea of whether or not, you have shooters that are good shooters for shooters that make, that when the pressure gets on. And the one thing I wondered going into last night's game and kind of some conversations with people about us, and, you know, I don't want to change my thought on it just because we won a game, is that a lot of our guys are undrafted, non-elite level athletes, and maybe in the playoff setting, that makes it harder. It may be, we've watched Dante struggle throughout his regular season career, and then he goes into the playoffs and he looks really good because he is a world-class elite, top 10 NBA pick athlete. And maybe that's a little different. You know, Gerald Green has all sorts of basketball flaws, but I think he was a former high-level first-round draft pick by the Celtics. Like, that athleticism is still there. Mo Harkless and Al Farouq Aminu for the Blazers have some flaws in their game, but they're elite-level athletes. That's why they were drafted where they were drafted, and maybe that has part of why we haven't had a elite shooting night yet in the playoffs. I frankly don't know on that one, but we have not had a good shooting night. We'll see whether or not we do at some point in time here. All right, so that's just kind of the big picture take that, the Jazz are making progress. Their defense has gotten better. They forced the Rockets. The Rockets have missed shots. The Jazz made a few more while not necessarily being, you know, tremendously a great deal better. Now let's dig into the nitty gritty. Let's dig into the kind of the individual plays and the moments and the matchups and some of those things here in a second. You can get all of your playoff news at one Twitter feed at Locked On NBA Net. It's a collection of all of the feeds of all of our hosts on the Locked On Podcast Network. That's at Locked On NBA Net. There's also an Instagram account under the same name, Locked On NBA Net. It's a great fun to follow. Those are both available for you, Twitter and Instagram at Locked On NBA Net. We'll look at that nitty gritty individual play coming up as we continue on Locked On Jazz. Today's show brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. I am driving the latest version of the Santa Fe. I got really nervous yesterday. Blake texted me what color. I was like, oh, no, they sold it again. I was going to have to give it back. It's so fun. It's got every safety feature imaginable. Hyundai really on the cutting edge on a lot of these things. The one that's pretty remarkable to me is how much this self-drives. You can just feel that technology breaking through. They don't want you to self-drive it. You still got your hand on the wheel, and but it's making some curves for you every now and then if it doesn't think you're doing it quite right. And it's got the cruise control that holds me at the right speed and then the right space from the car in front of me. It's remarkable. Drives super smooth. Great value. Check it out. If you don't have Hyundai on your list of cars that you're looking at right now, please add it to the list. Yeah, I'm not going to tell you how to spend your money, but I think you should add Hyundai to the list and at least see what you can get for your dollar. It's pretty remarkable. They're located at 4646 South State Street. Jason helped us out when we bought our car there. Blake is down in the Linden store and up in Logan as well. It's Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. That's the no regrets policy. 90 years in Utah, the Murdochs are making sure you have no regrets when you buy from them. Car washes for life. Safety inspections, oil changes, all sorts of great deals. No return 5-day price match guarantee. All unique to the Murdoch family, and you get that when you work with the Murdochs. Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. Today's show also brought to you by Homie. Homie is revolutionizing the real estate world. For all these years, you've decided, well, you actually haven't decided. They've decided for you that you're going to give away 6% of anything that you, of your real estate deal, because that's just the way the system worked. And you generally had no choice on, how you were going to be able to do that. So guess what? Homie has come in and revolutionized that. There's no reason for you to absolutely have to do that. So why doesn't Homie send, why don't you get the choice? And that's what Homie is giving you. They are giving you that opportunity. How are they doing that? Because their team of people come together and work for you, and then they set a price at $1,500 to list your house. That's it. Flat fee of $1,500. Their team of experts will work with you on listing and posting your house and getting it out for everything. And the data shows that they're selling faster than the average market house on the market and selling at a better price. And you're getting a ton more equity because of the fact that you're setting a price at $1,500. I can't tell you exactly what it depends on what the value of your house is, but you can just start thinking about this. That's equity that you're taking with you at the end. It's maybe to buy another house. Maybe you're taking with you, whatever it might be. But Homie is changing the game for you, and you are the big winner. Text Homie or text LOCK to 88588 to find out more about Homie. Text LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588 to find out more about Homie. That's LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. Well, we got to start with Derek Favors, don't we? Quinn Snyder last night, in a move that I think was in reaction to, I don't think it was in reaction to the Rudy Gobert turnover, but it's a 95-84 Jazz lead. So the Jazz are up 11 at the time. The Gobert's had a great game. The Rockets at the rim were 10 of 21 shooting at the rim, 11 of 31 shooting in the paint. So Rudy's had a great game. The Rockets, though, have Rudy has turned over a few moments earlier on a bad turnover that led to a dunk the other way. But the Rockets have gone to Capella goes out at the 9:02 mark. P.J. Tucker comes in. And then Chris Paul comes back in the game at the 6:27 mark. At the same time, the Quinn Snyder decides to go Jay Crowder and Derek Favors. I don't know if his intention at that moment was to go with them for the rest of the night. But it gets, things get interesting. The Jazz offense, I have that wrong. Gobert turns it over at the 446 mark, and Favors comes in at the 425 mark. It's 95-86. The Jazz have not scored for about 2.5 minutes. Alley-oop dunk off a Harden turnover right after that. The exact play I talked about yesterday on the show that was a sign of youth and exuberance and probably not the smartest play. The guys did again. Royce O'Neal, alley-oops to Donovan Mitchell. They did it again. This time it worked. I still don't think it's a very good play. I'll be honest with you. I am not a results-oriented decision maker. And I'm not sure that anyone would disagree with me, frankly. But it worked for that play. House misses a three, then Donovan hits a 13-footer, so the Jazz go up 13. Chris Paul makes a shot, it's an 11-point game, and then Favors just starts to dominate. We're up 11 when he's doing this. I think that's worth noting that, like, the victory's pretty well in hand, but then he just dominates. O'Neal misses a shot, Favors rebound. Rubio misses a shot, Favors rebound. O'Neal misses a shot, Favors keeps it away. Favors then gets a dunk on a back cut off the inbound that Favors had kept alive, and the Jazz go up 101-88. Pretty disheartening at that point. Jazz turn it over. It goes to 101-91. Donovan misses, Favors dunks, 103-91. Harden misses, Donovan misses, Favors dunks, 105-91, game over. I mean, that is an awesome little stretch there from Derek Favors. That was cool. Royce O'Neal as the primary assignment on James Harden is guarded Harden for 113 possessions, Rubio for 102, Donovan for 27. It's hard to say when being guarded by, but there's something to it. And you know, the Jazz are forcing him, directing him the way they want him to go into the defense, keeping him off, trying to keep him off the three-point line. In 113 possessions, it's interesting. There's interesting little pieces of credit to give out here on how the Jazz are guarding Harden. So to Rubio's credit, he has taken 15 threes in 102 possessions. So only 14% of his shots when guarded by Rubio are threes. That's important. When guarded by Royce, he's gotten off a few more. He's got 22% of his shots as threes. Okay? So he's also gone to the free throw line 45 times. He's taken 45 free throws when guarded by Royce. Excuse me, he's taken 45 shots, not free throws. Excuse me. He's taken made 10 free throws on plays guarded by Royce and 7 by Rubio. Now, when guarded by Royce O'Neal, James Harden in this series is 13 of 45 shooting. 13 of 45. Harden's only shooting 37% in the series from the field, 38% from three. Harden did not have a very good playoff against the Jazz last year either. That whole narrative that Rudy couldn't stay on the floor against with James Harden was just a false narrative. But last year against the Jazz, Harden shot 40% from the field and 30% from three. This year he's at 38 and 38. So he does not like this matchup a great deal. And the Jazz defense is getting better. He is shooting 29% when being guarded by Royce O'Neal in the playoffs. 28% from three, 29% overall. He's shooting only 39% when guarded by Rubio, and he's 6 of 15 on his threes. We talked about how few that is. When being guarded by Donovan, he's 4 of 5. Ingles, 4 of 5. Thabo, 2 of 3. So he's making hay when he's being guarded by somebody other than Rubio or O'Neal. Now, the team scoring at a much higher rate when he's being guarded by Rubio. And the Rockets, frankly, are switching off of Royce O'Neal onto Ricky Rubio. They want that matchup, which is telling, right? Late in the game, they're getting Harden, O'Neal off of Harden and onto Rubio. So you can tell what they want. That should tell you, you know, what Harden wants. Harden's telling you his preference. And that's revealing. But that's pretty good work on there. The game started with Jay Crowder scoring the first 9 points and Ricky Rubio conducting in a manner that they had not done so in the playoffs. Ricky was really good last night as a point guard, breaking the paint, getting in, kicking the ball out, creating opportunities that we had not seen from the Jazz in this series. And maybe that's why the shooting was better. The shot quality was actually, interestingly, less good last night. I thought early, frankly, the Jazz were taking contested threes and actually making them. And again, the boredom of and the bummer of analysis, there are times when it is just a make-or-miss league, and that truly may be the case last night. But I thought that Rubio just conducted early. And the game opened with Crowder scoring the first 9 points for the Jazz, one of them on a beautiful slice from Rubio. And the Jazz on another fast break, and Ingles found him on another. And the Jazz got that early lead. Rubio banked in a three, which was a contested three, which wasn't a very good shot, and it goes into the point of just shot making. But then Rubio drives the basket, gets the reverse side layup early to go up 22-16. Those were just drives that felt different. Ricky finishes the night 6 of 17, 1 of 7 from 3. So it wasn't, again, it wasn't some unbelievable shooting night, but he did have 11 dimes last night. So pretty awesome. Locked On NBA is there for you on a daily basis. Short form league-wide playoff look. Ben Golliver joined Wes Goldberg for Tuesday's edition. Sam Amick and I will be on Thursday. Wednesday you get John and Jake coming at you. So make sure you grab Locked On NBA and follow it. Locked On NFL Draft has everything covered for you as well. So, is there any chance here? Okay. The chances are very slim. But in one of the great tweets that I've received and that I actually sent to some members of our coaching staff because I thought it was so good last night, from Craig Irvine, it took a million-to-one combo for us to end up match versus the Rockets this series. Time for the odds to balance out one game at a time. Right. Crazy, impossible, unreal things have happened. The way this works, and it's unlikely, the idea that the Rockets, who have lost, came into the game having lost four games in their last 27 outings, could possibly lose four in a row, is insane. Okay, let's make sure we're clear on that. It's insane. But now how does it happen? The way it happens is that the Jazz have an unusually good shooting night on Wednesday. That finally they've played them enough times, they feel them, that they've been so far below their regular average. They're not a great shooting team, but they have an unusually great shooting night. The second thing that happens is that the Jazz, in fact, have solved something defensively against the league's best offense, holding them to 99 points and 94 points per 100 possessions in the last two games, two of the Rockets' worst 20 games of the year. And that, as we talked about from the beginning of the series, that this was an equally bad matchup for each team. That the Jazz really get blown up of everything they do, and that the Rockets, frankly, have had their worst shooting games of the year against the Jazz. Right? The Rockets' 82nd worst game of the year is their first game of the year against the Jazz offensively. Their 78th is the December 17th game against the Jazz. Now they've had two more that are that bad. They had a good game on February 2nd against the Jazz, which is what, you know, led to some of the feeling the Jazz had to change what they were doing. But they all, you know, the Rockets, three of their four offensive games this year against them were bad, and two of their four playoff games were bad. The Jazz fiddled with their defense in a manner that maybe the guys weren't comfortable and couldn't quite play out as well. And so now maybe they've dug in. So there's scenario one and two. That's how you somehow steal game five in Houston. Then it gets a little interesting because then you're coming back home here and you're now playing every other day James Harden with an incredible burden and Chris Paul being older. The Rockets really need to win game five for it's a huge game five is a huge game for the Rockets for their title contention. Because they need to come blast the Jazz, get out of this thing, go on, play their Sunday game one in Golden State with fresh legs and not have had to play a Friday game in against us and then possibly a game set. Like, they really need game five. This game five becomes a mammothly important game for the Rockets. The Jazz will have to, come out at full board. Now, talking to some of the Jazz players last night, you know, their comment was, all right, well, let's go to every other day and see if maybe we can, you know, we actually have more depth. I don't know if we do. But now you go get to game five. And so the Jazz have this unusual shooting night in game five. The Rockets offense still continues to struggle. James Harden continues to be uncomfortable. These things seem relatively unlikely, but let's say they happen. We now come back home for game six. You now are on every other day with a plane flight against a team that is older, whose primary stars have a large burden. Now, Donovan has a pretty incredible burden too, but at 22, you hope somehow that happens. And then the last part of this wild card is what happened to the Rockets in fourth quarter last night and what happened to the Rockets against the Warriors. And this is the unknown item about three-point shooting. Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni would dismiss this, I think. But the Rockets last year in Game 7 missed 27 straight three-point shots. And last night they missed 14 straight three-point shots. And is there something in three-point shooting that because of the distance and the variance, you get a little tight, it collectively you start to miss, and it's harder for you? The Jazz took 35 shots at the rim last night. The Rockets took 21. Does that lead to the possibility that if the series is extended, that the Rockets have a harder time making shots because of the fact that there's that tension, that they have so much on the line? Hey, I don't think any of that's a likely scenario to take place, but that's the script by which this does take place. That the Jazz, after four games of not very good shooting, bust out in game five with an unusually hot shooting game. The defense continues to disturb the Rockets' comfort zone. They win game five. We get home for game six with a raucous crowd on back-to-back playing, you know, now every other day with plane flights. And as the series progresses, the Rockets' three-point shooting falls off as it did last night. And actually, in fairness to it did last night, they went 17 of 45. They shot 37%. They just happened to miss 14. But Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni would say, well, you're shooting 50%. Then we missed 14 straight and shot 37%. Like, their variance has actually been pretty slim. They're 37, 41, 33, and 37 for the series. And they're right on their regular season average of 36%. They would say that me isolating those 14 is taking a small sample size and making a conclusion that's not true. I'm making a lot of conclusions that aren't true. I'm trying to write a script by which you come back and be the first team ever to beat an NBA team four straight on a team that hadn't lost four straight in all those days. We'll see. It's fun to be able to play again. We'll enjoy Wednesday. I'll talk to you tomorrow from Houston. Time to go jump on a plane and enjoy being with these guys for another day. It's a wonderful group, super people to travel with, great broadcast crew I work with, an honor to get to do it again. So let's go have some fun on Wednesday and cherish one more night at least, and maybe, just maybe, Friday night we'll have a party in Salt Lake City and have a little nightlife. This is Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Hope you had a good time last night and enjoyed it. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow.